Good afternoon or good morning to those of you on the West, and welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar Series. My name is Jennifer Simone, and I'll be moderating today's seminar. Today's topic is establishment surveys. Please be advised that today's seminar is being recorded. Today we'll have three presentations given by John Fowler of the U.S. Census Bureau, Joy Sharp of the Bureau of Transportation Statistics, and Johanna Zmud, Mia Zmud, and Chris Schimmick of Newstats. John Fowler is the chief of the Commodity Flow Branch in the Service Sector Statistics Division of the U.S. Census Bureau. Throughout his career at Census, he has worked on monthly and annual survey programs covering service industries, wholesale, and transportation, in addition to his work on the Commodity Flow Survey since the initial 1993 program. Joy Sharp is the assistant director for the survey programs at the Bureau of Transportation Statistics. She has worked at BTS for 8 years and is the co-manager of the 2007 Commodity Flow Survey. While at BTS, she has also worked on a number of other survey projects, including the National Census of Ferry Operators, the National Household Travel Survey, and the Omnibus Household Survey. Prior to coming to BTS, she worked 12 years at the U.S. Census Bureau on a variety of demographic surveys, and she has also worked as a survey research consultant for PricewaterhouseCoopers. Her academic background is in mathematics, statistics, and survey methods. Dr. Johanna Zmud is president of Newstats, a survey science consultancy specializing in transportation studies. She has 24 years of experience in survey design, implementation, and statistical analysis. She is an active project manager, typically for large-scale travel behavior surveys. In total, she has managed more than 30 household travel surveys. She has also managed 100-plus other surveys, including visitor surveys, external station surveys, onboard surveys, and tolling and road pricing surveys. She currently serves as chair of the TRB Data and Information Systems section. Mia Zmud, a research director at Newstats, has 22 years of experience in environmental improvement, integrating communications and research methods. She has 9 years of survey research experience with Newstats. Prior to this, she spent nearly 15 years on staff at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Much of her work in Newstats is in the area of establishment surveys, primarily for the purpose of inventorying and surveying business regarding their on- and off-road vehicles for air quality emissions modeling. Chris Schimmick is a survey research manager with 8 years of survey research experience and 11 years of professional experience. Over his tenure with Newstats, he has specialized in several different types of environmental and transportation-related projects, including tolling and road pricing studies, household travel surveys, transit onboard surveys, user-non-user surveys, and commercial freight surveys. He currently serves as co-chair of the TRB Freight Surveys Subcommittee on the Travel Survey Methods Committee. I'd now like to go over a few logistical details prior to starting the seminar. Today's seminar will last 90 minutes, with 60 minutes allocated for the speakers and the final 30 minutes for audience question and answer. If during the presentations you think of a question, you can type it into the smaller text box underneath the chat area on the right side of your screen. Please make sure you're typing in the thin text box and not the large white area. Please also make sure you send your question to everyone and indicate which presenter your question is for. The presenters will be unable to answer your questions during their presentations, but I'll start off the question and answer session with the questions typed into the chat box. Once we get through all of the questions that have been typed in, the operator will give you instructions on how to ask a question over the phone. If you think of a question after the seminar, you can send it to the presenters directly, or I encourage you to use the Freight Planning Listserv. The listserv is an email list and a great forum for the distribution of information, as well as a place where you can post questions to find out what other subscribers have learned in the area of freight planning. The web address to join the listserv is showing on the slide on your screen. Again, I'd like to remind you that the session is being recorded. A file containing the audio and the visual portion of the seminar will be posted to the Talking Freight website within the next week, and we encourage you to direct others in your office that may have not been able to attend to access the recording. The PowerPoint presentations used during today are available for download from the file download box in the lower right corner of your screen, and they'll also be available online, and I'll notify all attendees of the availability of the PowerPoints, the recording, and the transcript. So we're now going to go ahead and get started. Today's topic, again, for those of you who just joined us, is establishment surveys, and our first presentation will be given by John Fowler of the U.S. Census Bureau. As a reminder, if you have any questions, please type them into the chat area and we'll get to those in the last half hour of the seminar. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to John.
All right, thank you, Jennifer, and thank you everybody for joining us today. I'll be talking a little bit about the 2007 Commodity Flow Survey today give me a little bit of background on that and how we conducted it, and look forward to any questions you might have at the end of all the presentations today. A 2007 Commodity Flow Survey is a little bit of a unique survey at the Census Bureau. It is part of our economic census that's conducted every 5 years, but it's also conducted through a partnership with the Bureau of Transportation Statistics at DOT. Our goal is to measure the movement of goods in the U.S. by all modes of transportation at a very high level, U.S. state level of aggregation. A little bit of background on how we conducted the survey itself. We actually collected all the information throughout the data year in 2007, with a little bit of overlap in the end of 2006 and the start of 2008. The way we collected the information is that each establishment in the survey is mailed a questionnaire once in each calendar quarter, and it's a mail-out, mail-back survey for the most part. The editing and data review and resolution began in early April of 2007 and really continued through just last month in preparation for releasing our preliminary data, which I'll talk about more later. Commodity Flow Survey is a sample survey, and actually we have three levels of sampling. I'd like to touch on each of those this afternoon. First, it's a sample of establishments, a shipper-based survey, and the establishments are selected among those in mining, manufacturing, wholesale, and selected retail and service industries. We also include what we refer to as auxiliaries, and these are really warehouses of retail and other multi-unit establishment companies, and they support only those parent companies. The second level of sampling for the Commodity Flow Survey is the weeks of the year. We make sure we cover an entire 52 weeks of the year by breaking up the year into 1 week components, and each respondent is responsible for reporting for 1 week in each calendar quarter, and that's how we get the 4 weeks of reporting from each establishment. Probably the most unique feature of the Commodity Flow Survey is that we ask respondents to do the third and final stage of sampling in the survey. We ask them and give them instructions on how to conduct this, a sample of their outbound shipments for the 1 week reporting period that we assign to them. The sample is selected on a random basis, and on average, respondents are going to report for approximately 23 shipments on any given report form. The most they can report on the form, just based on the survey design, is 40. On each questionnaire and for each sampled shipment, the respondents are asked to report information about each shipment's origin and destination, all modes of transportation in the order that they occurred, the major commodity of the shipment, value of the shipment, the weight in pounds of the shipment. And we had a couple of new items on the Commodity Flow Survey for 2007. One is we asked whether the shipment was an intermodal shipment or not. And at the end of the fourth quarter, we asked all respondents a series of questions about third-party logistics providers, shorten that to 3PL questions on the slide there, just to ask them about the supply chain information to see perhaps how that's changing. We had hopes about the intermodal status question helping us identify that component of transportation, but unfortunately responses weren't of a quality we would had hoped for, so we probably won't be able to publish anything on that. And the problem was that the respondents really just didn't quite understand the terminology as clearly as we would like. In addition to those items I just listed, we do ask for additional information if the shipment is a hazardous material shipment. We ask for the respondent to provide the 4-digit United Nations North American or UNNA code on that. We've had great success with that, finding that we really don't have to supply a lot of additional information to these respondents. If they're shipping hazardous material shipments, they know what that code is and can easily provide it. We have a very high response rate on that item. For export shipments, we also ask the respondent to provide the export mode and the foreign city and country of the destination. Both the UNNA code and the additional export information allow us to spin that the data for those types of shipments in additional ways that will provide insight to those components of the transportation picture. A little bit about the types of summary statistics that we do publish. Our core items are summary level value tons, ton miles, and average miles per shipment. We also have those characteristics by commodity shipped, by the modes of transportation, and by origin destination flows. And many of our tables are 2, 3, and even 4-dimensional tables crossing those characteristics. New for the 2007 CFS are tables that are going to be shown by industry, in this case the North American, what does that stand for? North American
Industry
Classification System. I'm so used to calling it NAICS, that's all I know by. But we will have those tables for 2007, as well as coming out with the results of the third-party logistics provider results. We do publish the commodity flow survey results at several different levels, including the national level, census regions and divisions for all 50 states and the District of Columbia. We also have it for selected metropolitan areas and remainder of state areas. That should be approximately 60 to 65 or so areas. I don't have a complete list here, but if you go to some of the websites that we'll be highlighting later on, you can see the metropolitan areas that we had for the 2002 survey, and they will be pretty much the same with a few additional gateways that we added into the sample selection process for 2007. I mentioned that we do have additional tables and, in fact, a special report on hazardous material shipments as well as exports as part of our publications series. I want to talk a little bit about some of the improvements we made for the 2007 commodity flow survey. One of the biggest ones, of course, was an increase in our sample size from 50,000 in 2002 to over 100,000 establishments in 2007. And we hope this will help a great deal with improving the quality of the data that we're going to be able to provide. In addition, we conducted an advanced survey in February of 2006. We had two targets. First, we had approximately 45,000 auxiliary locations, which is almost all of them in our universe, because we want to better identify those that were engaged in shipping and include only those establishments in our sampling frame. This improved the sampling frame quite a bit and made the sample much more efficient. In addition, we also mailed out to 40,000 certainty establishments. Those are our largest establishments and contributors to the CFS. We want to make sure that we have the proper mailing address and the best contact information available for those. One of the things we found in conducting the commodity flow survey is that a key to getting the best data possible is to find the best contact in the company to respond to this particular survey. And a lot of other government surveys, it goes to just a financial area or accounting area. With our survey, it's best if it goes to the freight transportation experts. Another improvement that we made for the survey questionnaires and other survey materials was conducting cognitive testing. We visited approximately 70 companies over several months, got their ideas and thoughts on improvements to the questionnaire, instruction guide, commodity coding manual, and so on, and think that overall we made a lot of improvements and made the form a lot easier to go through for the respondents. Also, we have a new disclosure avoidance methodology. In the past, we've relied upon what we refer to as cell suppression, which hasn't had a big impact on the commodity flow survey in the past, but the potential impact was always there, and if it was going to happen, it was probably going to impact the publication cycle. So along with several other programs in the economic census, the 2007 commodity flow survey is using noise and fusion methodology to be able to provide more cells to the data users. And lastly, our data are going to come out primarily on the American Fact Finder, which is a web-based data dissemination tool at Census. And our 2002 data was already put out there, but this is really the first time that we've used the American Fact Finder as the release vehicle for our commodity flow survey. So we hope everybody will look into that and give us any comments back on how they find that environment as far as data dissemination goes. We will continue some of the print reports that we've had in the past for commodity flow survey, including the U.S. hazardous material shipments and export shipment reports. And we're very pleased to report that yesterday we released the 2007 preliminary report on the American Fact Finder, and those tables are available. Joy's going to go over some of the results that we published, as well as provide some of the direct links on both the Census site and on BTS's site where you can access that data. And now we're beginning to work towards the release of the final series of data reports, and that's scheduled for December of 2009 and will also take place on American Fact Finder. That pretty much sums up what I had to say today. Here's a site we can look up a little bit more information on the commodity flow survey and my contact information in case there are questions to think of after today's presentations. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you, John. And we do have one question. We'll get to that at the end. But again, if you anybody thinks of additional questions for John, please feel free to type them in. We're now going to move on to Joy Sharp of the Bureau of Transportation Statistics.
Hi. Well, John provided a nice overview of the background of the Commodity Flows Survey and the methods used to collect the data. I'm going to focus more on the data itself, especially the preliminary release that we released yesterday, as well as providing a brief overview of the purpose and uses. The objective of the Commodity Flow Survey is to provide a comprehensive multimodal picture of national freight movement, and this includes producing data products at the national, state, and metropolitan area level, as well as producing origin and destination flows. A very important aspect of the Commodity Flow Survey is that it represents the only available source of data for the highway or trucking mode, and we know that this mode dominates both in terms of value and tonnage on the freight that's been transported. This next slide is just to provide you with a sense of the type of estimates that are produced from the Commodity Flow Survey, and these results were taken from the 2002 iteration. Essentially, what we learned is that in 2002, on a typical day, approximately 43 million tons of goods valued at nearly $30 billion moved nearly 12 billion ton miles on our nation's transportation network. The second bullet again emphasizes what was said on the previous slide in that trucking dominates the movement of freight. And we learned in 2002 that about 74% or 3/4 of the value of freight and 67% or 2/3 of the weight were moved by the highway mode. And then another important use of the Commodity Flow Survey is it also provides one of the only available sources of hazardous material shipped by the highway mode. And from the 2002 survey, we learned that about 20% or 1/5 of all goods by weight moved were hazardous materials. Analysts and researchers use the Commodity Flow Survey data for a variety of purposes. This next slide just gives you a sense for what some of those uses are. It allows us to do trend analysis to look at the movement of goods over time. It also allows us to conduct economic analysis at a variety of levels. The CFS data are also used for developing models and analytic tools that are used for policy analysis and planning needs and decisions. It allows us to do forecasting for future demands for good movement and also for infrastructure and equipment needs, and so forth. The Commodity Flow Survey data is used by itself on a number of occasions, but it's also used through a number of value-added or derivative products. For example, the Commodity Flow Survey serves as the core data component for Federal Highways Freight Analysis Framework, and it's also used in a number of other private sector products, such as Global Insights TransSearch. John already highlighted a number of differences or improvements that were made to the 2007 survey, so I'll just briefly go through or emphasize some additional ones. First of all, we expanded the geographic coverage in 2007 to include some major freight gateways. These included 7 port areas, for example, Charleston and Savannah, and also included 2 border crossing areas. We also included the coverage of certain industries that had previously been excluded, and examples are select retail establishments and service establishments, and we also expanded the coverage of those industries shipping hazardous materials, recognizing this is becoming more and more important for safety and security reasons. We redesigned the form based on cognitive interviewing. As John mentioned, we also attempted to capture some additional information such as on intermodal shipments and on third-party logistics use. We doubled the sample size to assist with the reliability of the estimates and also to cut down on some of the suppression that's required in the data. We also expanded the edits and imputation routines in our processing. And fairly importantly, we introduced a new mileage calculation software, and this software had some changes to the mileage calculation algorithms, and I'll touch on a couple of these changes as we go through the tables. And then finally, the data products have also changed for the 2007. As John mentioned, we're moving more towards electronic dissemination, and kind of getting away from the paper products. For the 2007 survey, Census will be publishing the results on their American Fact Finder, their own web dissemination tool, and BTS will also continue to produce electronic products on its website in a variety of formats. I want to add, for the preliminary results that were released yesterday, There will not be a paper product. Instead, the six tables that are released will be available on both the BTS and Census websites. Again, the preliminary release consists of national level tables. There are basically six transportation characteristics or attributes for each of these tables, including the ones that those of you who are familiar with using the CFS data will recognize, those being mode, total modal activity, distance, weight, and commodity. And then, again, as John had mentioned, the new table that we're releasing this time around is the industry or NAICS series of tables. We're releasing one in the preliminary. There will be a whole set of series released for the final data. Each of the table consists of various shipment characteristics, value, tons, ton miles, which is simply a metric consisting of multiplying the weight and distance, and then average miles. Just as a cautionary note, I wanted to mention that these data that we released yesterday are preliminary. For the next 9 months to a year, we'll be continuing to process the data and make some minor corrections to some of the anomalies we see. And probably more importantly, the final data, we also weight, include another adjustment factor based on the information that's collected in the economic census. The tables that we produce for the preliminary report tend to be those that are highly aggregated at the national level and fairly stable. So while these numbers in the tables will change, they're going to remain relatively stable as compared to those that get down to finer levels, both in geography below the national level or as you cut and slice, say, the commodity or industry data down to finer digits or lower levels of specificity. These next several slides, I just wanted to walk through the tables that were released yesterday. This is the first table, table one, which is the mode of transportation. As you'll see, the basic layout of the tables are the same in that down the left-hand column, we have the categories of the transportation characteristic, this being the mode of transportation or what the establishment reported in way of mode or modal combinations of how the commodity was shipped. And then you'll see the shipment characteristics going across the heading row, where we show the value in millions of dollars, the tons in thousands of dollars, the ton miles in millions, the average mile per shipment, and so forth. You'll also see four new columns that are added to the right-hand side of the table. In previous CFS publications, we have provided measures of sampling error, in this case called coefficients of variation or relative standard error. But again, these were previously produced in separate tables appearing at the back of the publications or in separate tables on the CD. So this time around, to give the data user a better sense of the accuracy or reliability of the estimates, we're actually providing these in the columns to the right. And as a general rule of thumb, the lower the CV, or coefficient of variation, the more reliable the estimate. We do have a rule in the commodity flow survey that we do not show estimates that have a CV of greater than 50%. And this is because if you were to construct a 95% confidence interval, that estimate could be as low as zero or as much as twice as high as the estimate shown. So just due to data quality issues, we suppress it. Just a couple of takeaways on this table. And again, these were just released yesterday. We haven't had a lot of opportunity to do even our own analysis of the results and some of the trends of what we see. But just quickly comparing to the same estimates in 2002, what we're seeing is, in terms of value, there's been an increase of about 41%. In terms of tons, about 12%. And in terms of ton miles, 11%. And this suggests to us that the nation's infrastructure is continuing to be increasingly used for the movement of freight. And it also suggests that we're probably seeing some changes in the way that freight is being moved. Table 2 is what we call our total modal activity table, and this differs from the previous table in that for the multi-mode components shown in the first table, we actually break them down into their single mode components. So in this table, you'll only see the single modes. So for example, for truck, this includes the truck ton miles for those commodities moved only by truck, as well as the truck components for multimodal shipments. The next tables, tables 3 and 4, we show the shipment characteristics by ranges of distance shipped. And then in table 4, we show the shipment characteristics by the ranges of shipment weights. And this particular table, not too surprisingly, if you look at average miles per shipment, the lower weight shipments tend to go the further distances, with the exception of the very last categories, those shipments over 100,000 pounds. Table 5 is the new table that we talked about, the industry table, and we'll see down the left-hand column the NAICS industry codes. Just a note of caution for those of you who aren't used to using NAICS, this is a hierarchical industry classification system. There will be industry levels at the 2-digit, 3-digit, and 4-digit. Those within the 3-digit comprise the 2-digit, and so forth. So it's just a note to be careful that when you're using these data, to realize that some of the industries are nested within a broader industry grouping. This table actually goes on for a few pages. This is just the first page of the table from the web. And then finally, table 6 is the commodity table. And again, for the national level, we produce commodity information for 2-digit levels of commodity. Okay. As John mentioned, we'll have a much more comprehensive final data release in December 2009. The next year, we'll be working on completing the processing and the weighting of the data. For the final release, we'll have data produced not only at the national level, but at the state and metropolitan area, as well as producing origin and destination flow tables. We also produce, as we have in the past, a special report on hazardous materials and exports. Based on the information we collected this time on third-party logistics provision, we'll produce data on the extent and the services that are being used by these establishments. And we'll also be putting out some print publications. However, unlike the past where we printed paper publications for national, state, and metropolitan area, this time we'll only be doing three publications at the national level, and it's for the U.S. data, the hazardous materials data, and the export data. Finally, for those of you interested in going on to the BTS and or census websites to obtain these tables or look for more information on the survey, these are the two links that you can visit. The census website is, that's your link to the American Fact Finder, right, Jim?
Looks like it.
Okay. And then finally, if you have any questions or want to contact me after the webinar, my contact information is provided on the last slide. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joy. And I know everybody's probably rushing to get those web addresses. You can download the presentations at the bottom, and I'll try to bring them back up at the end. But we're going to move on now to our third presentation, given by Johanna Smud, Mia Smud, and Chris Schimmick of Newstats.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for participating in this. Newstats is presenting our state and local perspective on freight surveys. Such surveys have become more prevalent as ICE-T and SafetyLoo have included freight as a factor for both metropolitan statewide transportation planning. At these levels, freight surveys are done for three main purposes: policy decisions, for improved understanding of freight movements, and for use in freight travel demand forecast modeling. Some studies have multiple purposes. Different purposes lead to different sampling units and to the collection of varying data elements. It's not advancing.
Are you seeing the sampling challenges slide now?
No, I wasn't. Let me go back. Sorry about that.
No, that's the one that's showing on my screen. It may be taking a second to catch up for you.
Yeah, okay. Okay, here we go. Try it again. I'll move on and hopefully it'll show up for me. Freight movements are considerably more complex than person travel at the local level and change far more quickly than so there are significant challenges that we need to address at the survey design stage. While there are many, I'm highlighting three: sampling, instrument design, and data collection method. Sampling challenges begin when we try to define the commercial vehicle universe for a particular survey. Is it goods only, services only, goods and services, or the flow of goods? In order to define and delimit a specific target population, we typically end up with a slice of the freight universe. The typical available sampling frames tend to have limitations that often lead to undercoverage and overcoverage errors. Units are often missing from the frame because the rate at which the database has been updated may not grow or turnover in the area, or the universe is simply unknown. Also, units may be erroneously included in the frame or included more than once. This not only causes biases in the survey estimates, but it also is costly to survey execution in terms of budget and schedule, as the wrongfully included units are identified and discarded. Calculating sample sizes for freight surveys is inherently more complicated than passenger travel surveys, because establishment or vehicle attributes, trip rates, and other factors are more heterogeneous than for households. This causes more complex computations of sample size requirements and stratification approaches, and often affects them. While there is more to discuss in terms of sampling, I need to move on to instrument development. The complexity of goods and services movements means that there's an extremely large amount of information required to fully describe every aspect. In order to keep questionnaires short, It is almost impossible to collect all of the needed information in a single survey. So many studies, we talk about two examples later in this presentation, use a combination of two or more approaches, such as a driver survey together with a shipper survey to meet the research purpose. Complicating questionnaire design is the fact that a multiplicity of agents influence freight movements, including the shipper, receiver, customer, carrier, and distributor. Each or all is a potential respondent, but almost no potential respondent has all of the required answers to our survey questions. Most have limited or incomplete knowledge. In our experience in making the first contact, you get a lot of passing the buck before you find a respondent who is willing to participate and qualified enough to accurately answer the question. Data collection challenges focus on the surveying method. While this session is on establishment surveys, it is important to note that local and statewide freight surveys utilize different approaches, sometimes due to the specific research objectives and other times to factors in the local survey context that point to one survey method over another. For example, most local surveys are constrained by the requirement to design, field, and prepare a database in a matter of months. We have commonly used three approaches to meet client needs. First, establishment surveys. Here we typically survey shippers rather than receivers because shippers tend to be fewer in number, easier to classify and characterize, and easier to identify and locate. Second are carrier surveys that gather data directly from operators or drivers, often as a roadside, way station, or rest stop survey. And last are distributor surveys. These are surveys of intermediaries such as warehouses, transportation terminals, or distribution centers. The latter are much more complicated and costly to conduct than the former, so our experience tends to focus on establishment and carrier surveys. We now want to present three case studies to discuss how we've addressed these challenges in practice. First, I will discuss the value of time survey of shippers that was conducted for policymaking purposes. My colleague Mia will present a commercial vehicle travel diary survey that captured data to update a travel demand forecast model, and Chris will present a commercial vehicle driver survey that was conducted to understand freight movements on New York State highways. This value of time survey of shippers was done for the Georgia DOT under subcontract to HNTB. The purpose was twofold. First, to assess the opinions of decision makers at shipping companies with respect for the need for truck-only toll lanes, or TOTS. Second, to calculate the value of time for shippers as an important factor in designing potential pricing structure for the TOTS. This survey was one of two done for the objective. At the same time as the shipper survey, we also conducted a truck operator survey. In the interest of time, I'm just going to discuss the shipper survey. The universe for our shipper survey was all trucking companies with vehicles having four or more axles operating on the specific segment of I-75 that was the focus of the study. Because we were concerned about undercoverage of our survey universe, we used a dual sample approach. First, we obtained an abstraction of trucking companies operating in Georgia and surrounding states from a database of all commercial trucking companies in the U.S. maintained by the Motor Vehicle Carrier Administration. Second, we obtained other sample records via the truck operator survey that we were doing at the same time. That survey was done at weigh stations. Our surveyors took a digital photograph of the door panel of vehicles stopped for the interviewing, which displayed the trucking company name and additional contact information. If a phone number was not displayed, we conducted an internet search to find the necessary contact information. Data collected in the survey included attitudes about operating on the target segment, opinions about TOTS, information about typical trips, typical shipments, delivery schedules, penalty or incentive structures, and set SP trade-off questions to estimate the value of time. We completed a total of 332 interviews, of which half were equally captured by telephone, or CADI, web. There were many challenges in the conduct of this survey, of which I'm going to highlight four. First, there was the sampling challenge. We were sampling from an unknown population and so suffered from a lack of statistical control of the estimates. Second, the contacting and trying to find the interested and qualified person to serve as the survey respondent was time-consuming. Our project schedule was suffering. We experienced a 47% non-contact rate, a 40% refusal rate, and it was taking an average of 10 contact attempts per CADI complete. even though the interview was quite short, around 13 minutes. After several potential respondents indicated that they wanted to participate on their own time, we developed a web application. As mentioned before, even though this was developed after the fact, nearly half of our completed interviews came in this way. Now, my colleague Nia is going to talk about the second survey.
Thanks, Johanna. We conducted a commercial vehicle transportation diary study for the Maricopa Association of Governments as one of several inputs to an update of their truck model so that it would reflect recent rapid growth in the region. Other data, in addition to the diary, were generated by and collected by Northwest Research Group, who did an operator survey, and Cambridge Systematics, who were providing the modeling support to MAG, and also integrated our data into the model, as well as other data such as service truck activity they mined from existing sources. In regards to our methods, our universe consisted of firms that were owned and operated, that owned and operated fleets of large trucks and FHAA Class 5 and larger vehicles. This is two-axle, six-wheel trucks with NAICS codes listed on the slide. The NAICS codes on the slide were just applicable for the diary study component of the effort. Excluded from our universe were trucks that were covered in the operator survey with similar NAICS codes that delivered goods using a single route, such as warehouse distributors. For instance, that's the Walmart distributor who ships goods to another Walmart store within the region. In regards to the sample frame, we used the MAG employment database. It provided us about 11,000 firms meeting our definition. We used a probability sample of businesses and stratified them with a probability proportionate to the number of employees. We did this with the so that we could use employment size as a proxy for fleet ownership, because the employment database did not have information on fleet ownership, and we could not get access to the DMV records for the region. Our survey process was similar to a household travel study, diary study, in that we mailed an advance letter to the firm, followed with a recruitment call to screen for eligibility and locate the person responsible for fleet management. Eligible firms were then recruited, but rather than sending the diaries to them for completion, we opted for a more personable approach in which we delivered them in person with the intention to reduce the opportunity for them to opt out of the survey and to give us an opportunity to review the process for completing the diary directly with the operators or the truck drivers. We also picked up, retrieved the diaries, completed diaries so that we could review them in field and on site to fill missing or incomplete data by talking directly to the operators or the fleet managers. The diaries covered information including truck information, driver information, and identified individual trips on the day of travel. Now I'll review a few of the issues and challenges that were associated with the survey. First, the incidence was lower than we assumed it would be. In the employer database, there were fewer firms meeting our universe definition. The majority had two-axle, four-wheel trucks instead of the two-axle, six-wheel trucks. This assumed that they made smaller deliveries or were service trucks. And if the firm did have vehicles that met our definition, the number of vehicles per firm were much fewer than we had anticipated. Recognizing that the employment database would not provide a sufficient number of firms to meet our target number of diaries that we were hoping to complete, and finding that firms that would qualify was like looking for a needle in a haystack among our sample, we quickly looked to supplemental sample frames, and we identified three. One was FleetSeek, which provided about 647 additional sample items. The ATA Fleet Directory provided about 330 sample items, and U.S. Data Corp yielded 357 sample items. These sample frames helped us target firms with trucks that we knew would be eligible. Another issue that we faced, however, was, and which slowed recruitment, was a high amount of non-contact rates. Our rule was to make at least 15 calls before retiring a sample item, but to improve non-contact, we researched firms with repeated no answer or disconnects to get new numbers, business companies that went out of business, and we did get new numbers that way. We made in-person visits if we repeatedly got answering machines, meaning that we would do recruitment in field, go to their place of business to find someone there instead of using the telephone. And we also used in-field recruitment in that we, as we delivered diaries, when we saw a neighboring company that had qualifying trucks, if it was in our sample frame, we would also recruit them while we were in field. These steps all helped with recruitment, but also added to our time for recruitment and data collection, and did have an impact on costs. Overall, we did meet our we extended recruitment and data collection from 4 to 8 weeks, and despite receiving fewer number of diaries per participating firm, we did collect sufficient data for the modeling effort. Our response rate was 21%, eligibility was 13%, and we did have a high refusal rate overall of 66%. Now I'll hand it over to Chris, who will share his experience with the final study.
Thanks, ma'am. The New York State Department of Transportation Commercial Vehicle Driver Intercept Survey is being conducted on behalf of the New York State Department of Transportation and the New York State Thruway Authority as a strategic planning study to supplement data currently being collected by Transport Canada at U.S.-Canadian border crossings. Data will be used for a myriad of purposes, including, but not limited to, facility location, assessment of commercial vehicle parking, commercial vehicle routing, and traffic count locations. Data collection was conducted in two distinct phases. The first occurred in April 2008 and the second in September of 2008. Eligible respondents included drivers of commercial vehicles matching FHWA vehicle classes A through 13. To a large extent, the survey instrument was based on the instrument used by Transport Canada in their border crossing survey with some modification. Tablet personal computers were used to collect the data in the field. The technology we used allowed us to geocode route origins and destinations in real time and compute and verify the route used by the driver at the time the survey was conducted. Data elements collected included, but are not limited to, vehicle facility and freight characteristics, and driver attitudes and opinions regarding parking availability, route choice, and facility amenities. Over 1,000 surveys were conducted with commercial vehicle drivers at New York State Department of Transportation rest areas, New York State Thruway Authority travel plazas, and private truck stops. A total of 30 facilities were sampled statewide, and 2 days of data collection occurring at each facility. This next particular slide describes a couple of graphics that we see here. The one on the upper left-hand side shows a screenshot of the actual survey instrument. It's actually the introductory screen, as was seen by the interviewers. And on the bottom right-hand graphic is a screenshot of what the interviewer would see after they have collected a number of different origin destination locations from the commercial vehicle driver in the field at a rest area, travel plaza, or truck stop. As I said, the technology we used allowed us to compute a route in the field during the time we were surveying the interviewer, and that is the screen that was actually showed to the commercial vehicle driver. It kind of looks like what you would expect to see on MapQuest or Google Maps once you've identified a route. And that allowed us to verify the route in the field and move on. Probably the most challenging aspect of the survey was logistics. 30 facilities were spread out across the state, and we had to go to where the truck drivers were multiple times. As such, there were a lot of travel costs involved. Furthermore, the coordination required for this effort was massive, with the need for constant communication between interviewers, law enforcement, NYSDOT and NYSTA personnel, facility operators, and the traffic count contractor as well. Survey participation was approximately 70%. Key to this high response rate was being a good listener, as during the time of the survey, truck drivers were under the crunch of high gas and diesel prices, and this seemed to overshadow the conversations at many times. This made it difficult to keep the survey length down. Average survey length was actually approximately 16 minutes, but in some instances when we had a very talkative truck driver that wanted to vent about gas prices or some other topic, the survey ranged as high as 30 minutes in length. Properly trained and motivated staff was also key to the success of this project. Training occurred over a two-day period, including both classroom and mock interviewing at a facility. I'll also mention that nothing motivates surveyors like a paycheck, and we did pay surveyors more for this effort than for other field efforts with which we're currently involved. In addition to paying an hourly rate, we provided a per diem rate, sometimes, if necessary, lodging and a mileage reimbursement if there was driving involved from their home location to the interview facility site. Lastly, a pilot is critical to efficient full data collection regarding refinement of methods. In closing, I believe we've shown that there's some overlap in the challenges faced at the state and national level concerning the collection of commercial vehicle survey data. There is no single method of sampling or mode of data collection that is best suited for commercial vehicle surveys in the aggregate. Rather, the specific goals and data needs of each survey should drive how they are conducted, as there is a wide variety of factors that will affect response rates. And the last slide here simply has Johanna, Mia's, and my contact information should any of you have questions in the near future regarding what we talked about today.